On a Monday, it is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're slowing down developments, going one by one, starting with news last week that Congressman Jim Sensenbrenner will not seek another term next year. New York Times called him a Republican mainstay who found his way to the center of many of Washington's most divisive political debates. He's cast more than 23,000 votes during his four decades in office. A week prior to the Sensenbrenner news, it was Representative Sean Duffy who announced his resignation that's set for later this month. Do you live in either of the districts that Sensenbrenner and Duffy represent? What kind of candidate do you see taking their place? 800-642-1234 is your line to talk this out. Laurel White is Wisconsin Public Radio's State Capitol reporter. She co-hosts the WPR Politics podcast. Laurel, welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Kate.
Well, let's start with the Sensenbrenner news. He represents the 5th Congressional District, which covers most of Milwaukee's northern and western suburbs. How significant is his not running next year?
So this is a really big deal for Wisconsin Republicans and something that a lot of folks have had their eye on for quite a while. You know, when somebody serves more than four decades in Congress, I think there was a little bit of a queue forming for people thinking about maybe running for this race when Sensenbrenner did decide to step down. Sensenbrenner, as you mentioned, was first elected in 1978. He served 21 terms. And in addition to sort of this this long period of time where people could think about the seat, the potential of running for his seat, it's also a Republican stronghold in Wisconsin. It's kind of the heart of Wisconsin's Republican Party. And a lot of really powerful Wisconsin Republicans have come from this region. People like former Governor Walker, U.S. Senate candidates, our state Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald. So not only has there been a lot of time to think about it, there's a really deep bench in this part of the state for the party.
And Representative Sensenbrenner said that when he started his public service in the late 60s, that he would know when it was time to step back. And now was that time. What do we know beyond that reason? Did he say why he thinks it's time?
He just said, you know, this is he felt like he had served the district. It felt right to him. He is 76 years old. He's been serving for more than 40 years. So I think it was just in this case a matter of just kind of reaching that retirement stage and feeling like this was the right step for him.
So as journalists, we always try to find those career highlights, those gems that we want to hone in on. One of those is that he played a really big role in the drafting and the passage of the Patriot Act after the September 11th attacks. What is his legacy there?
So, he did play a really key role in passing the Patriot Act after 9/11. He was one of the lead authors on that bill. In addition to that, he also has really kind of distinguished himself in a couple other areas. I think a lot of people think about Sensenbrenner when they talk about immigration issues, especially in the past several years. He has been a really outspoken Republican voice in the immigration debate. He's really pro enforcement in terms of immigration. So he emphasizes things like border security and criminal penalties for illegal immigration and actually sanctions against employers who hire undocumented immigrants. So he's been a really prominent voice for the party in that debate. Another kind of thing that stands out in his tenure, of course, there are hundreds of things over 40 years, but he was also a really key person kind of at the forefront of the Clinton impeachment. So if you're looking for kind of those career highlights, I think that should definitely be mentioned as well.
And so talk naturally goes to who might run to replace Sensenbrenner. You said there's been a long queue for a while. Waukesha County Executive Paul Farrow is one of those potential candidates, and he had this to say about the race.
There have been conversations whenever Congressman Sensenbrenner was finally going to step aside. It was going to be a big race.
All right, so who is potentially going to be in this big race, Laurel?
So we have, I'm going to take a deep breath.
Breathe.
So we have quite a few. In addition to Mr. Farrow, Paul Farrow, who's the Waukesha County Executive, we have a couple of folks that people who have been following politics for a while, I'm sure, are very familiar with. Two former U.S. Senate candidates, Senate candidate Leah Vukmir, who was actually the Republican nominee for the U.S. Senate race. She lost to Tammy Baldwin in the general election last year. Vukmir was a state senator for quite a while before she ran for that race. And then before that, she was served in the state assembly. So Wisconsin Republicans are very familiar with her and her work. Speaking of the state Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald has also said he's very interested. I believe he said he was heavily weighing a decision to jump into the race.
So what would it mean if the Senate Majority Leader would step in the race?
Well, that would be a really huge kind of shift for Wisconsin Republicans in the legislature. I think it would be kind of a domino effect. So if Senator Fitzgerald chose to run for the race, to get into the race, he would have to leave his seat. That's a real key difference between the Sensenbrenner election and the Duffy election. Someone could run in the special election seat. They wouldn't have to vacate their state legislative seat to do so. So if Senator Fitzgerald left, that would obviously create a leadership vacuum where kind of people move up the line, or someone who's not currently in leadership could potentially shift into those roles. Those seats are empty. We have elections coming. So obviously it causes some ripple effect when just a rank and file member of the legislature chooses to step aside and run for a different office. But when it's a leadership role, that's a whole nother ballgame.
We're going to get to Congressman Sean Duffy in a moment, but Governor Scott Walker in recent days told WISN-TV that his son Matt is interested in the seat.
Well, he's had a number of people reach out to him. I think in particular what intrigues him is he feels frustrated that AOC somehow nationally is reflective of his generation. He's 25, and he feels like there needs to be a countervoice to that.
So AOC is referring to Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez of New York, who is often referred to by her initials. What should we make of a Matt Walker?
Well, Matt Walker obviously has a very strong potential endorsement in his father. The former governor has a lot of credibility, a lot of support within the state Republican Party. So having someone like the former governor kind of standing behind you in a race like this would be really huge for Matt Walker. I think Matt Walker also, in addition to his youth, he kind of has that, never served in public office before, sort of that outsider angle that we know has been very successful for Republicans in the past. We think about somebody like Ron Johnson, obviously not 25 years old, but somebody who sort of pitched the I haven't held elected office when he first ran, business person and outsider. And that seems to resonate with Republican voters in recent years.
We're talking with Laurel White. She's WPR State Capitol reporter. You can join in. Are you a constituent of Congressman Sensenbrenner or Congressman Duffy? What issues are the most important in your district that you'll be considering as candidates emerge, as they line up for these seats? How do you think that their leaving could shape the 2020 presidential race? Do you see a political advantage? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Laura, let's move on to Republican Sean Duffy, who announced late last month that he would be resigning later this month. He represents the 7th District, the state's largest district covering northwestern and central Wisconsin. What do we know about his reasons for leaving?
So Duffy's reasons are very different from Congressman Sensenbrenner. Duffy is much younger, much earlier in his congressional career. I think this came as a pretty big surprise for a lot of folks that follow Wisconsin politics, even Republican Party insiders. I think we're pretty shocked by this. Duffy said that he's stepping down because he and his wife are having their 9th child. Soon, I believe October is when the child is due, and it has been diagnosed with some heart disease problems. So it's going to be a high needs baby, and he decided it was time for his family, for him to be a little bit closer to home, not doing the commute between Wisconsin and D.C.
Well, thinking ahead to that race to fill his seat, leaders from both parties said the agricultural and trade policy would be major voting issues in that district. How do you see the issues shaping the election?
I think that's really going to be huge. I think that's the primary issue that a lot of folks are pointing to as really the pillar, or, you know, the key pillar of Republicans' campaign against President Trump, sort of focusing on the struggles that the Wisconsin dairy industry in particular has been facing over the past several years, some challenges that the ag industry has been facing in terms of reduced exports because of trade agreements, lowering prices. Obviously, the agriculture community has faced some challenges because of severe weather events as well. So talking about how government can step in and provide support in those instances. I think we're clearly seeing a theme from Democrats that this is an issue that they think they can win on with the president, so they're really hammering on it. And I think that because Duffy's district is so heavily rural and a strong representation of Wisconsin's agriculture community, we're going to see that debate play out in a really big way in that race.
Okay, so when would a special election be held for Duffy's seat?
Well, that's really the million-dollar question right now. We know that the governor can't call the special election to fill Duffy's seat until Duffy officially resigns on September 23rd. So we've got a little bit of time before the earliest possible date that the governor can announce that. I think some folks are watching that announcement particularly closely, because there is some speculation that if that special election lines up with the current primary and general election schedule for the Democratic presidential primary, that could really benefit the Democratic candidate in that race just because of strong turnout to vote for the party's presidential candidates. Governor Evers has said that he isn't thinking about that. He's not looking at it through a political lens. He's not thinking about what would be good for one party or another. He just wants to call the election as quickly as possible and get somebody in the seat to represent Wisconsinites. So we're definitely going to keep a close eye on that over the next month or so and see what plays out.
Breaking down developments in the halls of the Capitol with our state Capitol reporter Laurel White, who gets us up to speed most Mondays. Republican state lawmakers and Attorney General Josh Call are at odds over how settlements involving the state are handled. Do you think the AG should be able to settle matters without the approval of lawmakers? Do you think the laws limiting the powers of his office are beneficial or detrimental in this case? There's room for your voice, 800-642-1234. We'll be back with more State Cap in a moment here on the Ideas Network. We're looking at the powers of the State Justice Department on this issue of the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Under Republican laws passed during a lame duck session in December, Attorney General Josh Call is required to seek the Budget Committee's approval to reach settlement agreements in certain cases. And recently, Joint Finance Committee, they couldn't decide on a confidential process for reviewing and approving the agreements. So do you think the Attorney General should be able to settle matters without the approval of lawmakers? Do you think the lame duck law was effective here? What questions do you have on this process? We're at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. And WPR State Capitol reporter Laurel White stays with us. So, Laurel, looking at the Attorney General, Josh Call, and how this is going with Republican lawmakers currently at odds over how to handle these legal settlements involving the state, can you take us to the heart of this tension?
Mm-hmm. So really when this began was back in December when Republicans held the lame duck legislative session that passed a number of restrictions on powers of both the governor and the Attorney General. I think that some of the marquee things in the discussion of that were the limits and the powers of the governor in particular, but there were certainly things that rolled back what the Attorney General could do under previous administrations to what Attorney General Call can do now. And one of those things is seeking approval from the Joint Finance Committee to settle lawsuits involving the state. Democratic lawmakers back then, as they opposed everything in the lame duck session, said that requirement just isn't going to work. That process isn't going to hold up. We have learned in the past couple weeks that lawmakers who lead the Joint Finance Committee and the Attorney General have really been going back and forth for several months about how to create a policy where they can discuss these lawsuits in a way that meets the confidentiality needs of non-disclosure agreements that are often involved in these settlement cases, and the sort of transparency and information sharing that lawmakers want to feel like they can make an informed decision to either give their blessing or push back on potential settlements that the Attorney General is seeking. So what has happened here in the past couple weeks that shed light on that months-long conflict is the Attorney General actually called the committee in to meet on a matter that he said, or his office said, was of tremendous importance to the state. We never learned the identity of that particular lawsuit. We never got to that stage because these confidentiality talks really kind of hit a brick wall. That, interestingly, in the twists and turns of that story, that case completely went away. That deadline went away. But there have since been several other cases that the committee has attempted to meet to talk about, and they just can't seem to get past this roadblock, this confidentiality roadblock.
Well, let's take a call now. Steve joining us from Sun Prairie on this. Steve, what do you see?
Yeah, you know, I think it's pretty obvious the Republicans are playing politics in the lame duck session. I don't think anyone disputes that. But from a common sense perspective, they're in charge of the purse of the state, so they should have a say in terms of when something should be settled or something should move forward. And from a confidentiality standpoint, does Evers have to sign that confidentiality agreement? I mean, it doesn't necessarily make sense to me why, if the Attorney General is representing the state, why others in the legislature have to sign a confidentiality agreement, but Evers does not.
Steve, thanks so much. So, you know, what about the governor, and where do Democrats stand on this?
So that's a really big part of the argument. Steve really articulated that well. That's something that Republicans have said in the push and pull about this, is that Governor Evers does not have to sign confidentiality agreements to get information about these pending legal settlements. The argument from Call on that matter is that the governor, because of his executive function and his executive position, has privileged authority. He represents the state, and therefore, when the lawsuit involves the state in an official capacity, he is part of the state. Whereas lawmakers in the legislature, because they are obviously in the legislative branch, not the executive branch, they don't have that sort of inherent authority and position in the lawsuit. But Republicans don't really agree with that argument. They think if he's getting these briefings and this information, we should be able to get these briefings and this information.
Let's bring in Chris now from Waukesha. Chris, hi.
Hey, good morning. Great show as usual. Hey, just as a Republican, I was sad to see the politics get this far with the whole lame duck thing. You know, it was kind of sad to see it get this far. But if people remember, it starts with Chuck Kwala 20 years ago. But anyway, but of the things that were passed in the lame duck session, this is actually one of the more reasonable ones, because Democrats have used settlements to advance policy agendas on the national level, and seeing that happen on the state level would be bad. Example is environmental policy changed by settlement agreements that were confidential until they were signed off on by a judge. And then all of a sudden we have new environmental regulations. And that's not good if you don't have legislative input, because regulations are supposed to be passed by the legislature.
Chris, thanks so much for that viewpoint. And is this one of the ways that Republicans are saying, hey, you know, tied to money here, we need to get this out here?
Absolutely. Republicans want to have more say over, you know, the amount of money that's accepted in these cases, where it's deposited. They actually have already sued the Attorney General. They've asked the case to go directly to the state Supreme Court over how settlement monies are deposited, whether they go to certain departments or, as Republicans are arguing, whether they go straight to the state's general fund. Really, the Republican argument here is they want to provide more transparency and more oversight and more accountability to Wisconsin taxpayers, because in certain cases, these can be large sums of money that come in from these lawsuits. And they say that, sure, this hasn't been a practice with previous attorneys general in Wisconsin, but they believe that the increased sort of publicity or public eye that's on this under the lame duck proposal, if it rolls out the way that they intended it to, is something that is really necessary and helpful to the state.
Well, let's move on now to WEDC. Governor Tony Evers has named a new secretary to lead the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation. That's Missy Hughes. What do we know about Missy Hughes?
So Missy Hughes was previously the chief mission officer and general counsel, for Organic Valley, a company that Wisconsinites, I'm sure, are pretty familiar with. She served in that role since 2003. She's interestingly the first woman to be appointed to serve as the head of WEDC. So this is a big step for the governor. I think this is interesting to note that actually another provision of the lame duck laws actually limited when Governor Evers could make this appointment. This was something that under previous administrations would have been made at the same time other cabinet appointments were made. The governor in this case had a little bit of a pumping the brakes moment. He wasn't allowed to do this until September. So I think a lot of eyes were on who he chose for this position.
As a candidate, Governor Evers had proposed to defund this WEDC or WEDC. It appears he's not doing that. So why did his plans change?
You know, that's, I think, again, a really primary theme of the lame duck session was kind of rolling back some of the controls that the governor had over WEDC, not only this executive appointment, but sort of how some of the board members are appointed. Republican lawmakers knew that Governor Evers was incredibly critical of WEDC. The organization has had several audits over the past few years that have been very harsh about some of its job tracking mechanisms, for example, how it tracks how many jobs are created after money goes out, kind of clawing back that money. The governor had been very critical of that. So I think the calculus here is sort of what he thought was going to be possible with the Republican-controlled legislature and what battles he wanted to fight. Obviously, the governor campaigned on a platform of things, and he introduced a number of those things in his state budget, including the Medicaid expansion, for example. We know that didn't get past the Republican-controlled legislature. I think this is a case in which he just kind of had to choose what he was going to push. And the reality of abolishing WEDC with the current legislative structure in Wisconsin, I just don't think it was doable for him.
Laurel, thanks as always. Thanks for joining us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Laurel White is Wisconsin Public Radio's State Capitol reporter, and she's part of the WPR Politics podcast. Just ahead, most people who are eligible for lung cancer screenings last year didn't get the correct one. We'll talk about barriers to getting tested. I'm Kate Archer Kent. This is the State Capitol Report on the Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.